All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Imagine this. You're looking at a company's financials, maybe one based right here, but it's doing business everywhere. Buying from Europe, selling in Asia, borrowing in US dollars. Suddenly, those simple numbers get, well, a lot more complicated because they're not all in the home currency.
And that complexity, that's exactly what we're diving into today. Specifically, we're, cracking open the ACCA Financial Reporting FR Syllabus and Study Guide, the one for September 2025 to June 2026.
Okay, and our mission, it's really to help you, especially if you're gearing up for that ACCA FR exam, get a solid handle on a key area, accounting for foreign currency transactions.
Yeah, chapter 12 in the detailed guide.
But we're not just like reading it out loud. We're trying to pull out the essentials, what the syllabus really expects you to know.
Think of it as a kind of targeted revision booster. Just focusing on what the guide says is critical for this topic, specifically for doing well in the exam.
Okay, let's unpack this then. First, off context. Where does this topic, foreign currency transactions, actually fit in the whole FR syllabus?
Good question. So this area, it's labeled B12 in the guide, and it sits squarely in section B of the syllabus.
Section B, that's accounting for transactions and financial statements, isn't it?
That's the one.
So it's about how you actually record and present specific business activities.
Exactly. And it's crucial to remember that FR builds pretty heavily on what you've done in financial accounting or FA. FR takes those basics and expects you to apply them, analyze them in more complex situations.
Got it. So FA is the groundwork. FR is applying it to, let's say, trickier real-world stuff. The guide also mentions these intellectual levels, level 1, 2, 3. How does that play into B12-4?
Right, the intellectual levels. The syllabus uses these to show the depth required for each topic. Level one is basically knowledge and comprehension. Can you define things, understand the basics?
Okay.
Level two is application and analysis. Can you actually use that knowledge, perform tasks, break things down? And level three is synthesis and evaluation. Can you combine different ideas, critique information?
So, roughly, level one is knowing what it is, level two is knowing how to use it, and level three is more about the why or the bigger picture implications.
That's a really good way to put it, yeah. And here's the critical bit for your exam prep. Foreign currency transactions, B12, is assessed at level two.
Level two. Okay, that immediately tells you, doesn't it? This isn't just memorizing definitions.
Absolutely not.
The exam questions on this aren't likely to just ask, define functional currency. They'll need you to apply the rules, analyze a scenario with foreign currencies, maybe calculate something.
Precisely. It links directly to the applied skills nature of the FR exam. You need to show you can take the principles and apply them to the facts you're given.
Showing not just what the rule is, but how it actually impacts the numbers in the financial statements.
Exactly. That's the core of level two.
Okay, level two application analysis, that's the watchword here. Let's dig into the specifics then. What does the guide say you actually need to apply? The first learning outcome, B12.A, it mentions the distinction between functional currency and presentation currency. That sounds pretty fundamental.
It really is. B12.A requires you to explain that distinction. The syllabus defines the functional currency as the currency of the primary economic environment where an entity operates.
Primary economic environment. So, sort of where the company mainly earns and spends its cash.
That's the essence of it, yes. You look at factors like what currency influences its sales prices, what currency are its main costs in, where does it get its financing, what currency does it mostly receive from operations. The currency where most signs point, that's likely your functional
Okay,
currency.
like a company in Germany doing nearly all its business in the Eurozone. The euro would be its functional currency.
Perfect example. That makes sense.
And the presentation currency. What's that?
That's simpler. Really, it's just the currency the financial statements are actually shown in. So an entity might have a euro functional currency, like our German example, but maybe it chooses to present its accounts in US dollars.
Why would it do that?
Well, perhaps its parent company is US based, or maybe it's listed on an exchange that needs reporting in USD. Lots of reasons.
Ah, okay. So functional currency is about the underlying business reality. Presentation currency is how you package it up for users.
You've got it. And the crucial why behind all this, why we need these definitions and foreign currency accounting at all. It's just because business is global now. If that euro-functional currency company buys materials from China in yuan or sells goods to Brazil in reais,
right,
those transactions and any assets or liabilities that result, they aren't initially in euros. So to prepare accounts that, you know, make sense and are consistent, you have to translate everything into one currency. Usually the functional currency first, and then maybe into a different presentation currency if needed.
So B12 Bond A sets the scene, the basic concepts, and why we even need to bother with this stuff. International business. Now, B12B seems to be where we get into the how, the actual accounting.
Yes, B12.B is the real core application part. It requires you to account for the translation of foreign currency items, and the syllabus breaks us down a bit further.
Go on.
Okay, first, it talks about accounting for the translation of foreign currency transactions at the reporting date. This covers things happening during the year. Say, a company makes a sale on credit to a U.S. customer, invoiced in U.S. dollars. That transaction needs recording initially in the functional currency.
How's that done? What rate do you use?
Well, according to the standard that's IAS 21, which underpins these rules, you record it initially in the functional currency using the exchange rate at the date of the transaction, the spot rate on that day.
Okay, so if our German company sells goods for, say, $1,000 when the rate is $1.10, they'd book a receivable and revenue of about 909 won, 1,000 divided by 1.10.
Exactly right. That's the initial bit. But B12.B specifically says at the reporting date. What happens if that U.S. customer hasn't paid by the year end? You've still got that receivable denominated in dollars.
And the exchange rate has probably changed by then.
Almost certainly. And this is where remeasurement comes in.
Yeah.
Which brings us nicely to the second part of B12.B, accounting for the translation of monetary and non-monetary foreign currency items at the reporting date.
Monetary and non-monetary. Okay, another key distinction the syllabus expects us to get our heads around. What's the difference?
This is absolutely vital for B12.B. Monetary items are basically currency held in assets and liabilities that will be received or paid in a fixed or determinable number of currency units.
Like?
Think cash, receivables, like that dollar invoice payables, loans. The key is the amount you'll get or pay is fixed in that foreign currency.
Okay, so anything where the amount is a specific number of foreign currency units.
Yeah.
And non-monetary.
Non-monetary items are, well, everything else. Assets and liabilities that don't involve receiving or paying a fixed number of currency units. Examples, inventory, property, plant, equipment, PPE, intangibles, maybe equity investments. Their value isn't fixed in currency units.
Right. Cash, monetary. Yeah, invoice, monetary. A building, a patent, non-monetary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do you translate these two types at the reporting date, according to B12.B?
This is where the accounting treatment splits, and it's, you know, prime territory for those level two application questions. For monetary items in a foreign currency, the rule is translate them using the exchange rate at the reporting date, the closing rate.
The closing rate. Why?
Because the amount you'll eventually get or pay is fixed in the foreign currency. Mm. So any change in the exchange rate between when it arose and the year end directly hits how many functional currency units that fixed foreign amount is worth. And that difference. It's recognized as a foreign exchange gain or loss. For items from normal trading, these usually go straight to profit or loss.
Okay, so back to our German company. Their $1,000 receivable is still there at year end. Let's say the rate is now 1 teller and 8 cents. The euro's weakened a bit.
Right.
So the receivable in euros is now worth $1,000, 1 teller, 8 cents. About 926 euros. It was booked at 909 euro. That difference, about 17, is a foreign exchange gain in profit or loss.
Excellent example, yes. That shows the rule for monetary items perfectly and where the difference goes. Now, for non-monetary items, the translation at the reporting date, it depends on how the item is measured in the foreign currency.
How do you mean?
Well, if a non-monetary item is measured at historical cost in the foreign currency, think PPE bought some time ago.
Okay.
You translate it using the exchange rate from the date of the original transaction, the date it was first recognized. Crucially, these items are not retranslated using the closing rate at the reporting date.
Okay, so historical cost non-monetary items use the rate from way back when they were bought. Why is that different?
It's because their value in functional currency terms isn't really exposed to exchange rate changes in the same way. If our German company bought equipment for $50,000 when the rate was $1.10, cost $45,455, that historical cost in euros doesn't just fluctuate because the euro rate moves around later.
Right.
The economic value might change, sure, but the historical cost and its translated amount stays based on the rate when that cost was locked in.
That makes sense. It's not a fixed pile of foreign cash you're waiting for. It's an asset whose cost was fixed back then.
Exactly. But there's a wrinkle. If a non-monetary item is measured at fair value, or it's been revalued in the foreign currency, then you translate it using the exchange rate that existed when that fair value or revaluation was determined.
So you use the rate from the date of the remeasurement, not the historical rate, not the closing rate.
Precisely. The translation follows the measurement basis. Revalued item. Translate the revalued amount using the rate on the revaluation date. If it's fair valued using market prices at the reporting date, well, then you'd use the reporting date rate. But that's because the fair value itself is set at that date. The principle remains: translate non-monetary items at fair value using the rate when fair value was determined.
Okay, that's a subtle but really important point. So the syllabus expects us to apply these very specific rules. Is it a transaction or an item? Monetary or non-monetary? Historical cost or fair value?
Yeah.
And it's all based on IFRS principles, like the guide says. It's not just learning rules by rote. It's understanding the logic behind why things are treated differently.
Absolutely. Understanding that underlying principle, the exposure to currency movements, that's really key to nailing BPAY 12 at level 2. Monetary items are exposed. Their functional currency value shifts with rates, P&L gain or loss. Historical costs, non-monetary items aren't. Their functional currency cost is fixed at the historical rate.
This sounds like... Well, it sounds like the examiners have plenty of ways to test this. How might it actually pop up in the FR exam?
Yeah, given it's level 2, you could definitely see it in the objective test questions sections A or B and potentially woven into the bigger constructed response questions in section C.
What sort of objective test questions? Multiple choice, fill in the blanks.
Could be definitional, maybe asking you to pick the functional currency from a mini scenario, but more likely they'll test simple application. Like calculating the forex gain or loss on a specific payable or receivable, or asking how a non-monetary item at historical cost should be translated. Quick computations, applying the core rule.
So calculation-focused, but kind of straightforward applications of the rules we've just gone through.
Generally, yes. But don't forget, because it's level 2, it could easily be part of a bigger Section C question. Imagine preparing extracts of financial statements for a company with various foreign currency dealings. You'd need to apply all these translation rules correctly, receivables, payables, maybe a foreign loan, foreign PPE, just to get the right numbers in the functional currency accounts.
Or maybe they give you some figures already translated and ask you to explain why one amount used the closing rate and another used a historical rate, or why a gain went to P&L, testing the understanding behind it.
Exactly. The FR exam mixes calculation and discursive elements. For B12, you need to calculate the differences correctly and be able to explain the logic. Why treat monetary differently from non-monetary? Why do gains, losses arise? Where do they go? Just knowing the formula isn't enough. You need the why based on the IFRS principles.
That really hammers home the level 2 aspect. It's about putting the knowledge to work and being able to explain how and why. Okay, so pulling this all together then. For an ACCA student revising FR, what's the ultimate key takeaway for getting B.12 right?
I think your revision for B12 has to go beyond just reading. You need a solid grip on the definitions functional versus presentation currency, monetary versus non-monetary. Absolutely fundamental. But the real focus, because it's level 2, has to be on the practical application. Being able to account for transactions when they happen, and crucially, knowing and applying the right translation rules for monetary and non-monetary items at the reporting date.
And given it's level 2, that means practice scenarios, right? Calculating the differences, thinking about the journal, the impact on the P&L and balance sheet, it's the doing and the explaining they'll test.
Absolutely. Practice is, well, it's non-negotiable. Get comfortable spotting transaction dates, reporting dates, deciding if something's monetary or non-monetary, picking the right rate, doing the right accounting. Work through examples that make you calculate and explain.
That feels like a really clear roadmap for revising this, well, let's be honest, slightly tricky area, based purely on what the syllabus demands. We've covered where it fits, the depth needed level 2 application, the key definitions, the specific translation rules for transactions and balances, and how it might look in the exam.
Right. So armed with this, you know, understanding of what the FR syllabus expects for B12, you should go back to your study texts, your question banks, and really focus your efforts on applying these rules. Don't just read, calculate, analyze, explain.
Okay, and just one final thought to leave you with as you grapple with this topic.
Right.
While we've been deep in the technical accounting rules, just remember the real world behind it. Those rapidly changing global exchange rates, they aren't just abstract numbers for accountants.
Hmm.
They create real volatility, real risk for companies. They affect import costs, export competitiveness, the reported value of overseas assets and debts.
Yeah, definitely.
Those foreign exchange gains and losses you're busy calculating, they can seriously swing a company's reported profit around. It makes this technical bit of accounting surprisingly central to understanding how a global company is really doing.
It adds a fascinating dynamic layer to it all. Good luck with the revision.